It's a 2-week break, but it's the same old story for Reading Football Club as they lose 2-1 at Cardiff to ensure their miserable run on the road continues. We'll look back on that and plenty more on the Tireless Den podcast, episode number 42. Thanks very much for taking the time to download and listen to us today. My name is Dan Wimbush. I'm the editor at the Tireless Den, and I'm delighted to be joined once again by our deputy editor, Mr. Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Evening.
And the godfather of the Reading FC podcasting scene.
That's a title and a half.
Don West.
Don West.
Alan West, otherwise known as Westy. Westy, hello.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Johnny, just before we go any further, have you calmed down in
just
these
about,
2 weeks?
Just about, but as we know, anything can happen within these four walls.
I enjoyed the listen back to that. That was good.
I loved it. It was amazing.
It was fierce.
Especially with knowing the certain bits that had been cut out.
Yeah.
And sort of slotting them in.
If you join us for the Christmas edition of the show, we'll fill you in on the bits that get cut when the tape recorder stops rolling.
Yeah, we might have an outtakes tape that we bring along.
We'll it would be interesting. There is a lot of stuff that goes under the radar.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, one thing that unfortunately can't go under the radar is Reading's defeat on Friday night at Cardiff. Guys, I can't say I went into the game expecting an awful lot. I know I predicted a draw in our predictions league, but that was more out of hope than realistic expectation. So another defeat. I mean, 2-1 as a scoreline doesn't sound too bad, but in all honesty, Reading were never really in this game, were they?
No, and I mean, I was doing a bit of tweeting on the sort of official account, and I tweeted one thing that particularly struck me, which also was pretty much the same story at Charlton. First half, we had 65% possession, we had more shots, I'm probably sure we had more crosses, as Nigel Adkins likes to reel that one out. And yet we go in 2-0 down, and a man down as well. And it just sort of, you know, the game had that basic feel to it where we had a lot of the ball, but we weren't doing anything with it, and they were clinical. And you can say that they were lucky with the goals in that one was a penalty and one was an own goal, but at the same time, you cannot lie with the fact that the score completely reflected just the fact that they were taking their chances and we weren't.
The interesting thing is, and I want to get your view on this, you two, is constantly, Nigel Adkins and the players now are saying we were controlling the game for large spells. Now, for me, if you watch a team like Chelsea this week, who played West Brom, they controlled the game. They scored 2 goals and then they kept the ball and they basically toyed with the other side. Now, do you think Reading, by having a lot of the ball, is controlling a football match? Because I think the team that scored the goals is controlling it. And if they're letting you pass it around, then you're not really in control of anything, are you?
No, we saw with Charlton the other week, they were perfectly happy to let Reading lump balls up and have Beakey and Tubman-Home deal with them.
Deal with them all day
Clubs
long.
Have figured Reading out. They're really not a hard team to work out.
And the difference in, as you're saying, with controlling it, because in the second half, Cardiff did control that game. And listening on the radio as well, Tim Deller and Mick Goodin, they were bored. They were just saying, well, this game is absolutely dead. Cardiff need to do something to try and get their fans involved. Because all they were doing was just passing it around their back four, maybe pass it into midfield. They had no desire to go forward whatsoever. And that's why 2-1 flattered us in the end, because Cardiff didn't show any attacking impetus. They had 2 or 3 very good chances to get another goal. But at the end of the day, 2-1 did flatter us because Cardiff never out of second gear in that second half.
Yeah, not only that, once again, where's the first goal come from? A corner that's landed in the 6-yard box and we've ended up shooting ourselves in the foot. If you watch it, Pearce obviously gets pulled out of position and ends up putting his own net. But before that, if you see where Federici's position is when that ball come into the box, when they scored, Federici's 2 foot inside his own goal, where they've basically bullied him because they know that he's not going to come for anything. So if you stand on him, he's going to make a hash of it. And he didn't get a chance to get off his line because he was bullied and the whole team were bullied and the ball ends up in the back of the net. Even for the penalty, I thought if you look at Federici's positioning, I think Adkins said, he said that Federici was just about to pounce on that ball. He wasn't. Federici was doing a dance of a little frog like he normally does when he should have been pouncing on that ball because he was favourite for that ball when it went through on goal, in my opinion.
Well, yeah. we've got a couple of questions about Adam Federici later on, so we'll expand on Fed's role later. But sorry, Johnny, go on.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, Alex Pearce is going to have the horrible moniker of the defender's unwanted hat-trick in the own goal, penalty conceded and a red card. I mean, yeah, I do sympathise with him because I don't necessarily think that, well, yeah, he was at fault for the own goal. It goes in on his foot. You can't really legislate for that. But I think in the penalty, particularly, I mean, Hector just watches the ball go over his head and Lafondre's got a one-on-one with Pearce. You have to say Lafondre did well to take it round Pearce. And I'd even question why it was whether it was a red card. I mean, keeper's right there, you've got a defender running back. I was amused on the highlights by the ref running over to the linesman, you think to have a bit of a consultation. Is this a red card? What did you see? No, he's just forgotten his red card.
Yeah, that was it,
needs
yeah.
to get one off the lino.
But it's, again, it's another situation where we spoke about it for weeks and weeks and weeks. Any high ball into that box that lands in a 6-yard box, we can't deal with. And this happened again.
Turn circle of a planet.
Yeah, a train. Yeah.
No.
Downscaling it.
In fact, he turned quite well this week because someone dragged him round. Maybe helped a little bit.
Day to forget for Alex Pearce. He'll be banned for the Norwich game as well. Probably be glad to get out of the fire line. I think he's played every game this season, and part of that horrible defence, he's probably glad to.
Leaves us seriously short as well, doesn't it, if Ferdinand's not fit?
Well, he's supposed to be back in training this week, and we'll come on to some of the injury developments in news bites. But Michael Hector, we've talked about him. He's been up and down all season long. He does get a nice goal, and this was probably one of his better games, especially after Pearce got his red card.
Well, when you consider... I mean, he had sort of an easy game, and I think basically the defence did have a bit of an easy game because, as I said, Cardiff had absolutely no attacking impetus in the second half. You know, good performance from him because he effectively is marshalling that defence after Pearce goes off. He's the only centre-back that we've got in there. And I thought, you know, I thought he coped relatively well with
But everything. Interesting thing is, when we used to say about when we had Lafondre here, he's not going to outrun you. He can't beat you in the air. All you really need to do is stop him getting that ball in the box. And he's easy to defend against, really. We said it when he's been here. He's easy to defend against unless the ball's dropping for him in the box. So if you're up against Lafondre, I don't think you're going to have too hard a night anyhow most of the time.
Well, he's got one goal in, 15 games, I think, now for a £3.5 million signing. But there was a bit of news coming out from Lafondre after the game. He took to Twitter saying he was disappointed for getting booed by the Reading fans. Now, my initial reaction to this, on a personal basis, was, I don't get what you're whinging about. You're an opposition player now. In my eyes, your fair game. Yeah, I don't think I would have personally booed him because generally when you boo someone, it winds them up and they're determined to score. But if somebody wants to give him a bit of stick, it's the same as you want to give Peter Whittingham some stick. They're an opposition player, fair game. But it seemed the majority of the opinion was the opposite, that, you know, he was a former Reading player, did some good things for the club, and he deserved more than that. What do you think, Johnny?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a bit like Morrison. He didn't really leave in contentious circumstances. I don't think he necessarily... he was angling for a move, really, wasn't he? He was sort of saying to Adkins and McDermott quite publicly, I should be starting games.
Yeah, if I'm not playing, I look elsewhere.
But, you know, he did score a lot of good goals for us, a lot of important goals for us, and you have to admit that in that in the last season in the Premiership, he had by far the most highlights, the most good memories of any of that season. He won Player of the Month in January, and McDermott got some manager.
Important goals as well, didn't he, Premiership? I was surprised he got booed, I must admit, but end of the day, get over yourself. Who really cares?
I mean, you can. I think the fair way to do it perhaps would be cheer him when he comes out and then start booing him when we sort of do with other players like J-Tab.
I think it'd be very different when he comes down to the day.
Okay, I'll play a round of applause. Yeah. I'm sure.
I don't think Morrison will, but I'm sure he will.
As I said, if you want to give him a round of applause, that's fine. I said I would have probably given him a polite clap, but if there are fans that do want to give him a bit of stick, I said I think he's an opposition player.
Yeah, let's face it, there's not many players that come back to Reading and get booed onto the pitch, is there?
No. The poll result, anyway, was interesting. 63% of you said it was wrong for him to get booed. 16% said it was fair game, and the other 21% said I don't care either way.
Yeah, well, it's fair reflection.
So there you go. So, yeah, anyway, if you want to share your thoughts on that for next week's show, send us in a tweet with hashtag TTE Tyler Stend, or have a comment on that article. It's still on the front page. It's about 3/4 of the way down. Just scroll down. So, but still, Lafondre and Morrison, neither of them scored, which was shocking.
Yeah.
Didn't realise they had Matthew Connolly as well, former championship winner in the club as well. We could deal with him right now.
He was good, actually. I thought he was a good player. I mean, he only played probably 4 or 5 games before he got injured, didn't he? And then they sent him back. But, yeah, he wouldn't be too bad down there now, must have been.
I think if there's one positive for me from this game, it's that it once again shows that there's not a massive gulf between Reading and a lot of these sides. Yeah, I know we're getting beaten often, but it's not going to take too much of an improvement to start turning the tables. Because outside of maybe Derby, who are just in fantastic form and I think are going to win the league. I said that about Forest in August. But Derby have shown now for months and arguably 2 seasons now that they're a class above. But other than that, no team's outclassed Reading. And I don't think it's going to take too much for them to start turning that round.
No, I mean, I'd sort of disagree with you on that, in that it's another game where we've had to chase the game. And that's because we don't score the first goal. And we know that we don't generally do well when we concede the first goal because teams can just sit in. And that's not helped by the fact that we had 10 men in the second half. I mean... You know, for me, you know, as I said, the first half really just said everything. We had more possession, more shots, more corners, more all of this stuff, and yet we went in 2-0 down.
Yeah.
It's the problem with being clinical. It's the problem with creating good chances, because we had a lot more shots, but they never really tested their goalkeeper. And I think, you know, we only play well in the sort of the last 15, 20 minutes of games when we're actually trying to chase a goal.
When we're more direct. When, yeah. when we're actually going for a game rather than...
Well, no, no, I take the point. We've been, you know, well beaten. But what I'm saying is I don't think there's a massive gap. I don't think that you're sat there saying, oh, God, Rennes have got so much work to do to be better than a Cardiff, you're right, to be better than a Brentford, to be better than any team.
It's a poor division again. And like I said before, Rennes have got some good players and there's no excuse for them to be where they are.
Yeah, and again, going into this game, Nigel Ackie's again beset with injury problems going into it. Obviously, he loses Jamie Mackie and Pavel Pogrebniak late on, and now he's got a suspension in Alex Pearce to deal with. Still no sign of Jem Karachan, Danny Guthrie. Yeah, and Hope Akpan with an injury blur as well, but we'll come right on to that in just a few minutes' time. But just before we close then, this talk of the Cardiff game, Reading now dropping down the table even more. I think we're, what, 16th, 17th in the table? No, we're 15th in the table at the moment, but we're only 2 points clear of Rotherham. And I remember sitting here a few weeks ago saying, are Reading closer to the top six or a bottom three side?
Well, we're 3 points off relegation.
Yeah, 3 points off relegation, yeah.
Seven off the playoffs.
With some shocking form as well.
And joint fourth most conceded in the league.
Yeah, certainly
out there. Scoring a fair few, but we're just letting them in as well.
Yeah.
So,
I suppose on a positive side after the Cardiff game, at least they didn't give up, Reading.
No.
At least they didn't go. And we was talking a few weeks back about, are they playing for him? Well, in this occasion, you'd have to say they didn't give up the whole match. They did give it everything they had. Just on the night, it wasn't good enough.
There's a question I was going to say for the tweets, but I'll say it a bit now. Someone said, oh, I don't know, this in a joke way, but they said, oh, when are we getting Pants Day back for this year? And the whole thing about Pants Day is players are not trying sufficiently.
Yeah.
I don't think for a minute that these players aren't trying. I just think that they're not, just not performing. They're committing stupid mistakes. And once again, I mean, two goals today... Two guys on Friday, even own goal, penalty.
Yeah, it's poor errors. They just continually shoot himself in the foot.
So anyway, we tease injury news. So we'll move on to that and a couple of other bits of news in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to News Bites. A few things to talk about. First of all, we'll get on to the injuries straight away. If you listened to the Tarhurst End podcast extra with myself and Charles Watts on Friday, you would have got most of this news. But for those of you who don't tune into that one, a quick roundup. Jem Karachan still not fit and ready to return to action, as the time being anyway. Although, as I said to Charles, Reading seem to spring players back on you out of nowhere. Seems to just magically come back to fitness. But at the time of recording, Jem Karachan, no nearer. Danny Guthrie, again, it's just apparently he's in contention every week, but he just doesn't make it.
Mm.
So it sounds like they can't get to the bottom of that. Craig Tanner, as we know, has been ruled out for the season. The big injury blow over the last couple of days has been Hope Akpan being ruled out for up to 3 months with a shoulder injury that he picked up on international duty. He tweeted earlier today, which is Monday, saying that the operation went well. So it's just the road to recovery now. So get well soon, Hope. Real shame for him because he's right back in the mix and had been one of our better midfielders this season.
We just started making an impact where he'd struggled before, I suppose. Yeah, and again, it's a thing of international duty. Sometimes players come back injured. You just have to expect it sometimes.
Absolutely. But on the positive side, Sean Cummings and Gareth McCleary both back in action. Both were in the squad for Cardiff. And in Gareth McCleary's case, got 45 minutes. Yep. He didn't really come on to his contribution in the Cardiff game. But Johnny, what did you make of him?
I think he still looked a little bit rusty. He had a decent chance when... I think Murray crossed it into him and the keeper just got there ahead of him. On the radio, they were saying a little bit of tension between him and Adkins, which I wasn't privy to, but sounded quite interesting. But no, I thought McCleary had a decent game back. You could see you know, the old electricity was there. He wasn't scared to take a man on, but for most of the time they had two men on him. It was, you know, a relatively simple job.
It'd take him 3 or 4 weeks to get flying, I'd have thought, at least. Maybe around Christmas he might pick up his form, but for now I think it's just a matter of trying to get him match fit, which will take a little while.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see whether he plays at Norwich. I imagine that'll depend on whether Jamie Mackie's fit. He missed out with a niggle on Friday. Didn't sound like they expected him to be out for a long time.
He might start him and give him an hour.
Yeah, could do. I still think you'd rather keep him on the bench and bring him on if you need him, but I guess, needs must at the moment.
When you need him.
Yeah, I suppose. Anton Ferdinand as well is due to return to training today. So hopefully he'll be back.
Do with him back.
Well, yeah. If not, we're left with the defence of Jake Cooper and Michael Hector.
Well, they're going to rush him back, aren't they? Ferdinand's going to have to play.
Well, they did last time, didn't they?
He's going to have to play, simple as that.
Even if you only get 45 minutes out of him. Yeah. As a, yeah, that, he had a very composed 45 minutes against either Rotherham or Blackpool. Can't remember which. Rotherham. And he looked a lot better than the others do at the moment.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And speaking of players being on international duty and whatnot, Adam Federici has given an interview where he says he might turn down a call-up for Australia for the Asian Games this January. So that would save him missing four games running in January.
He's done that last time, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
If he's not first choice, I suspect he won't bother going.
He's come out and said, basically, I've got 6 months left on my contract. It's a big time of the season and I don't particularly want to go. As much as I'm honoured, I don't want to go over there to be third choice. So,
which is fair enough. I can't blame him on it.
No, me neither. And it's good news for Reading as well. I think we'll come on to this in a minute, but you want as many players there as possible.
Yeah, again, we'd have to have an experienced really goalkeeper in, so I don't know if there's any worse.
Yeah, the only other bit of interesting news around the club this week, it concerns the ownership, who reportedly had a board meeting last week. Apparently this was a scheduled board meeting. This wasn't anything to discuss.
This was from the Reading FC website.
No, this was scheduled. No, well, no, again, Charles clarified this on Friday. He said that the owners, when they first came over, had said, we're coming back over in November for a board meeting. So the timing's matched up.
But can we also add the owners and Samrit Bundit Kitsada, seeing as Samrit Bundit Kitsada is not one of the owners?
Well, apparently he wasn't in these board meetings,
but he seems to know a lot about everything that's going on.
It's a bit murky.
Yeah, and again, check out and listen to our talk on Friday in the podcast section. And also, Charles has written on the Get Running website a very interesting piece on the Thai ownership and the questions about them. But we'll not talk about that now because we have several tweets on that from the listeners. So we'll move on to that and plenty more in your tweets and emails.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, thanks for all of you who got in touch with us this week. You've just heard some of the contact details, but I'll just rattle through them quickly. The Twitter is at the Tarlhurst End. It's facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. thetarlhurstend@gmail.com is your place for emails. We've also got threads over at the Royals Rendezvous and Hobnob Anyone, so feel free to get in touch with us any way you like. But I will say, if you do want to send us a tweet, use the hashtag TTEPodcast, as it makes it a lot easier to sift through. And I'm delighted to say that loads of you have got in touch with us this week.
There's always loads when things are going badly.
It's like Santa's mailbag, isn't it?
It is. Months early, but. And I think Nigel Adkins is on the naughty list, judging by some of these. But we'll start with some of the tweets about the ownership that we just mentioned in News Bites there. We'll start with Hoops, one of our assistant editors at the site. He says, why have the club not told us more about the new owners? What's going on? Joe Stevenson follows up with, what do the club gain from not telling us about the new owners? Gary Woodward says, what do you make of Samrit's role in the club? Seems to provide some insider board view, but the club plays down his role. So, thoughts on those three tweets. Starting with Hoops, why do you think the club haven't come out with more info?
Well, clearly, I listened to the one you did with Charles on Friday, and clearly Samrit was part of the initial discussions, and we saw a lot of photos of him on social media wearing a Reading shirt and around the boardroom and stuff. But then, when the ownership actually came out, Samrit was nowhere to be seen in this, and someone had seemingly taken over his 25% share in the club. I don't know why. I mean, you've got this Sassima lady who seems to be fronting it, and John's spoken a lot about how much of a nice lady she is, and she's got the right ideas. I mean, you know, all it would take is just a simple statement on the website. Look, here are these people, and
it's unnerving.
I don't like it. I think we spoke about when they first took over that some of these sort of new takeovers nowadays are a little bit shady. And this doesn't seem any different, really, because Samrit, I think he posted on Facebook not so long ago that my role in the club will become clear soon enough. And even that is a little bit tinged with murkiness, really, because why even put, if you've got no role in the club, then why put that you will be, it will come to the forefront soon enough.
Well, he's certainly got no official ownership.
It's a little bit strange.
I think we've got to face the facts that this possibly wasn't the absolutely ideal takeover. But given the strife Reading were in, I don't think they were in a position to ask every single question possible.
They couldn't be fussy, could they? Let's face it. And Mr. Badaisky will tell us. Mr. Badaisky will tell us it's a good thing because it's a good thing for him. And again, it was a good thing for the club at the time. But whether it's a good thing in the long term, we spoke about it before. They're an investment group, so
yeah. They're looking
to make money.
The most frustrating thing to me, and I said, you know, you said this to Charles, the very fact that Reading have just come out of a period of ownership strife and intrigue and not knowing where the money was coming from, it just makes it worse. The fact you've got one back to back. Now, taking the other side of the coin, though, they've done nothing to at the moment suggest they're actually, there's nothing dodgy about them. I mean, we've bought players, we've been signing players to new contracts. You know, there's been any sort of hint of wages not being paid, anything like that. So it seems at the moment everything's above board. So maybe they're just private individuals that don't want it.
Maybe no news is good news to a certain extent. They're obviously trying to work the club out for the first year or so and then maybe make an impact afterwards. I'm not sure. But again, they haven't done anything to worry us of yet, but they haven't done anything to tell us what's going on.
I think there is a nice openness, certainly about some chairman. I think people like Karen Brady and the West Ham chairman, is it Golden Sullivan? They're on Twitter as well. And obviously they don't answer every single tweet like, oh, won't you buy us this player? Yeah. But having that nice bit of openness can be good because it, you know, the chairman like to get involved. And I think Crystal Palace chairman is similar as well. I don't particularly like Samrit being so open. Certainly not chatting to every single Reading fan about every question that they have and saying that he's flying in for a board meeting
to discuss
the future of Nigel Atkins, which is not something that you necessarily might want to find out as a manager on Twitter, and certainly know that he's talking to random people.
He likes the attention, doesn't he, Samrit?
Yeah, he does like the attention.
I think he does, and again, he's got his own football club in Thailand, so he's he's not shy about it, let's put it that way.
No.
But again, it's just, I think if you want to take over a club, if you want to become part of a club, then you get the fans on board by letting them know what's going on. You ain't going to tell them everything. Clearly, you're not going to. But it would be nice to have a link between the people that took over and basically our club. Mm-hmm. And it's not there at the moment.
Yeah, and we had another tweet in as well from someone saying, well, why haven't Star got involved in demanding stuff? And with the greatest of respects about Star, their power is very limited.
It's extremely limited because the club basically help them along. And if they start making demands and shouting about, then they just stop helping them along. So,
and Star do got a lot of good things.
Yeah, they're good at what they do.
Fans forums. Yeah.
They're not there to be given the big questions.
I'm absolutely positive that they would have asked the questions of when are we going to hear from these people, and the club will probably just say we've put it to them, and that's all they can do really. I mean, we're talking about a support, and we've had debates on this in the past. And you can go look through the Tullist End archives for great pieces from the likes of John Keane. In the past, you know, this isn't a massive pressure group with 15,000 rabid Reading fans behind it.
No. It's a small band, basically.
Absolutely. And they, as I said, they do what they do well. They do ask questions, but it's a case of the club needing, you know, what pressure have they got to answer them? And at the moment, they haven't got any pressure to answer. So, anyway, we'll see how that situation transpires. I'm sick of talking about owners on this podcast. And hopefully they'll go and splash a load of cash in January and we'll all be happy. Anyway, right, moving on to the man of the hour, who was the subject of our pub chat last week. So much so that I didn't really think...
Don't say his name.
Yeah, can't mention, say his name three times, he appears.
with a tan on his white teeth.
And a tactics board.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I don't have one.
And positivity.
Well, I didn't think we needed a pub chat this week, which is why we've gone straight on to tweets and emails, but we have to talk about Nigel Atkins. It was obviously a very long and passionate debate on the podcast last week.
It's a good one.
Yeah, go back and listen to it if you haven't. It's still pretty much exactly relevant, to be honest, because not a lot's changed. So track that one down, episode 41. But for comments on Nigel Atkins, we start with Mark Sugar, who gives it a slightly different slant. He says, the theme of conceding soft as bleep goals continues. Would you be open to a change of coaches rather than a manager?
I'd be open to anything that stops us conceding goals, but I don't think...
They need a Wally Downs type character in there to work with the defence?
It was interesting. I don't know if I told you this, but when I went to that McDermott talk the other week, he was talking about Wally Downs, and he was saying that Wally Downs hated the fact that he was called a defensive coach until he started getting work as a defensive coach, and then he stopped hating it. Because wherever he goes now, he's looked upon, right, Wally Downs is coming in, and he's like the main man now. If you're going to go to anyone, you're going to go to Wally Downs. So he used to hate it, but now he loves it, so I'm sure he'd be happy to come back and help out.
Well, I do think it is concerning, the amount of soft as bleep goals we are conceding, because when we said this last week, we said this the week before, it's never an amazing team goal from the opposition. No. It always stems from a mistake, and the two goals that Cardiff scored... came from us, essentially.
I'd be interested to, I didn't check it out, maybe I will do that. I'd be interested to see, that year that Southampton basically blew the league and we won it, I'm interested to see how many goals they were conceding, because I seem to remember they scored a lot, but
they scored more than us, they conceded.
Yeah, well, I spoke to Chris Rann, who is a Southampton blogger, who's helped us out with bits and pieces in the past, a view from the town end and whatnot, and he was saying that it was noticeable to their fans, but they were so good attacking that they didn't mind. And what he did say was, as soon as Pochettino came in and replaced Atkins, there was a noticeable step up.
Yeah.
So it's clearly something that is a problem with Nigel Atkins' size. They do concede goals. But I wonder if it's a case of the coaching staff still not being invested in as much. Because I remember there was a big purge of coaches and staff, wasn't there, after Coppell left?
Yeah.
Brendan Rodgers was allowed to bring in a load. And then obviously we ran out of money and Brian was basically working with him and Nigel Gibbs, wasn't he, for most of the time? The academy guys.
But I often look at the players when they're warming up at the Mazda, and there seem to be four or five coaches out there helping them warm up. So I don't know whether he has. I don't know how the coaching structure is down there, but there certainly seem to be a lot more coaches out there doing the pre-match warm ups and all the drills and stuff than we ever had under.
He's got Crosby and Wilkins, hasn't he?
Yeah, but it's a problem that we've brought up every week. So they must bring it up at the training ground, mustn't they? Surely you'd have thought so.
Yeah,
it's probably a bigger question than we can answer now. But how can you? Surely it's nothing you can do on the coaching ground to stop stupid errors. You can't say to Alex Pearce, I'm going to teach you how to not bring down a guy in the box or not score an own goal or tell Aaron Cole not to fall over at Brentford and stuff like that.
How can we deal with the big ball in the box? You know what I mean? Yeah. How can we defend Federici so he can get out of off his goal line?
Yeah,
how can we stop getting bullied?
And there's a question of structure as well, you know? And defending from corners, the players don't think, well, I'm going to stand here. The coaches say to them, you stand here. If they line up like this, you do this. And you often see coaches, when at corners, shouting at their players, get that man, he's going to wheel around the back, that sort of thing. So clearly the coaches have an idea of what is happening.
But the way that Nigel Atkins speaks in his post-match, it sounds like the players don't follow what he's saying, or there's some sort of disconnect. Because it's the amount of individual errors that are causing Reading goals more than structural weaknesses, at least in my eyes. Going forward, it's probably more the structure, but at the back, it's just been stupid error after stupid error.
Yeah, it has been. But again, we've got some young players back there. Maybe that's got something to do with it. But yes. I still think we're conceding the same goals every week. And there's got to be a reason for that. And it needs addressing. It's just not getting addressed.
Yeah. A team doesn't make that many individual errors without there being something wrong.
We spoke about the big ball into the six-yard box and not getting dealt with. And teams know that now, and they're just doing it all the time.
Mm. Okay, well, someone with strong feelings. Johnny, you'll probably agree with this. Brian Davis. Time for a change at the top. Atkins is a fraud. Never liked him. Tried, but this is dismal.
Yeah, he does remind me a little bit of Derek Okora, if anyone knows who that is. A spiritious medium from Liverpool.
Got over my head.
Who is, well, he's not a spiritious medium, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
He does seem a bit corrupt. Not that Atkins is corrupt. I'm talking about Derek Okora.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is he gives us persona that he's something that I don't think he is.
Derek, if you're listening, those views are from Alan West. Not representative of the talent.
I'm not saying he's corrupt. I'm saying he reminds me of Derek Okora.
I'll tell you what as well, whenever I saw Nigel Atkins at Southampton in post-match interviews, I never liked
him. No,
I will be honest.
I don't think many people like him, but liking him or not liking him is the difference. Can he do his job?
You can't say, I don't like him, but damn, is he getting results.
Yeah.
No, he's not. No. We're going back to what we spoke about last time.
Yeah.
If you liked him, would you play harder for him? You would.
Well, Chris Gunter, it's interesting, Chris Gunter's come out in the press today and said sacking him would be a mistake. And obviously he wasn't Atkins' buy.
Yeah, but he's made him captain and he starts every week.
He said Atkins has been through stuff that people don't even realise, so...
Yeah, but...
I don't know. No, I'm just saying it's interesting. It's not like he's... I mean, players would just keep their mouths shut if they wanted him out.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, I mean, we've all seen managers get the sack and whenever the players are interviewed, they very rarely say sack him, especially when they're starting every week.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. They don't say anything, do they?
Well, they do tend to say no, I think we're doing a great, we can turn it round, same old stuff.
I don't know. I think you just stay silent.
I think it's very rare that a player come out who starts every week and says they should sack him.
And one player doesn't necessarily
represent,
like one Alan West doesn't necessarily represent the views of the Tarlow. One player does not necessarily represent all the views of
The good thing is, Derek Okora can never sue me because he can't prove that he's a spiritualist medium. I'm not saying Atkins was corrupt. I'm saying Derek Okora was. Let's put it on record.
Okay, anyway, as we mentioned, if you do want to sue anyone...
Got away
Anyway, royalty points says predictable sideways football, 2 wins in 12, 3 points off the relegation zone. But let's wait to sack him. Why?
I like this guy.
Yeah, very much in your way of thinking.
Why wait? Now is the time. The new manager would have a month or so to assess what he needs.
I mean, like,
get us going forward.
Like you said last time, it's relegation form, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I just think that once he gets players back fit, they'll turn it around.
I still say he's got a good side now.
He's nearly got everyone back fit.
Not that team that started on Friday.
Wasn't a bad side for the Championship.
It was worse than Cardiff's.
Well, arguably maybe it was, but Cardiff just come out of Premier League.
And we just lost to Cardiff. So and what's your point?
Two of our players.
They just spent seven million pounds.
I was shocked to see Mikel Antonio is the third top scorer in the Championship. Nine goals.
He looks good every time I see him. I did say he was raw. I should have kept him.
Anyway, an aside there.
But. Yeah, mostly Bobbin says, could one of the reasons for not sacking Atkins be that we simply can't afford to pay him off and pay more to replace him?
Would we just promote from within though?
Eamon Dolan's been tipped by a lot of people, but...
In the programme, they did a bit on the academy. I think he was sort of saying, I'm happy enough doing what I'm doing, to be honest. He's been there 10 years now. I think this is his 10th season. He's just happy enough bringing that on and seeing them develop into top players.
He's been a manager as well. He had a brief spell at Exeter, didn't he?
Yeah.
So obviously not the biggest fan of the role. Bobbins goes on to say, if we did replace Atkins, what's your views on bringing in a former Royal?
Mm.
Well,
I guess Parky would be.
Yeah, that is something else that someone else has brought up. I can't think who's tweeted this now, but we'll come to it later. But someone else has suggested Phil Parkinson.
Really?
Yeah.
Nah.
Not getting a lot.
I don't think you can do something for sentimentality's sake, and he's not exactly.
In fact, it was Brian at the end of his tweet. He said Parky, hashtag Parky in.
Mm. Thing is, when you bring in former players, I think they get a lot more time because people are reluctant to try and sack them. Mm. But also, if I was Phil Parkinson, would you want to come back? Because when you come back, you know what I mean, you're a former legend. I wouldn't want to come back and taint
that. And with the greatest respects to Phil Parkinson, he's not had the best time.
No, he's not.
Especially when you get into the top two tiers. He's done all right. Obviously, fantastic achievement getting Bradford to a League Cup final. But
he's not set the world alight, really.
No, didn't do well at Hull. Didn't do well at when Colchester were in the Championship. Mm. Didn't do particularly well at Charlton.
No, he's probably at his level.
Yeah, I mean, you see someone like Ian Holloway when he got Palace up last season and he was like, actually, I'm not up to this, and left. And
well,
Pulis.
Pulis came in and... Yeah. Pulis.
Yeah, Tim Collier says, who is Reading's next manager?
Pulis, getting down here.
I can't answer that question until you tell me when this manager's going to be sacked, really.
Yeah. He took him out of the back, that's one thing.
Absolutely, but is that the type of football that you really want?
Yeah, but I don't... It's a bit of a myth.
He played long ball football.
Nah, it's a bit of a myth that he plays long ball football. He just gets the best out of what he's got, and
that's true.
That's what we need.
Talk about likeable characters, though. He's not the most...
I'll tell you likeable. What, Brendan Rodgers would be out of a job soon.
Yeah. He can have another crack at it. We'd keep the ball for even longer, then. Good job, games we lose.
It'll be like the glorious second coming of Steve Coppell, but no.
Oh, dear. Tom says, Nigel Atkins has brought in 3 great players. Nothing suggests he won't do it again this window, so why get rid of him? Time is needed. There you go. Someone on the positive side of the coin.
Again, how much more time are we going to give him?
Yeah.
Another 3 games.
I think as long as Reading stay out of the bottom 3, I think you give them the time.
Yeah, I'll say another 3 games that could be in the bottom 3.
Absolutely. But this will come down to, I'm sure we'll talk about this, but it's the Bolton game now that's looking like an absolute D-Day game for Nigel Atkins. Because with all due respect, I know Norwich have been wobbling and we'll come on to them a bit later, but it's not a place you go and expect to get a result. But when you've got Bolton at home, who are, 18th in the table?
Yeah, and then you've got Birmingham, who again are a shock inside, you know what I mean? You can't be losing both of them.
I think Brendan Rodgers got sacked after his 20th game. Well, certainly it was around that time anyway, so that would be history repeating itself.
And if you're going to make a change, you want to do it before January, don't you?
Yeah.
And
we talk about cynically when people sack managers, but it does make sense in this sort of current situation.
Of course it does.
Now, I do agree with Tom, though. He has had a pretty good record in the transfer market, though.
Yeah.
And I think, I hope he does get to January, because I imagine that now he's had a good 6 months to have his eye on players, knowing he's got a budget to work with.
Mm.
I just wonder, there's this lingering thing about financial fair play in the background though as well, so we can't forget that.
And my other thing is, you can't rely on building an entire new team. Yeah, if you go into a company, you don't hire an entire new workforce, well, do you? You manage what you got. And
funny you should mention that, because No Money No Cry says, the argument goes, he needs his own players. When does a manager get the time to get his own 11? I can't remember a manager who's not had to inherit players and improve them at Reading FC. Hmm. It's a poor excuse and one for the fence sitters.
Exactly what I said last week. You've got to coach the players you've got. And if you can't do that, you're not good enough.
Hmm.
George Dolan says, think Jesmond Adkins should come after the Birmingham game. That and Bolton provides the perfect opportunity to find form. I agree.
Yeah, but then we've played Blackpool Rotherham and turned them over, but they're not good sides, are they?
But this is what I'm saying, though. If you are beating the worst sides in the league, then you're going to stay up. And again, it's, I suppose this comes down to this whole...
It depends what level you're at. What's worse than us at the moment? Because Brentford and Derby and Bournemouth and Blackburn and Charlton and Cardiff weren't, so...
I'll tell you the other interesting thing. I did a piece on the website, I think, about a week ago about how, comparing him to McDermott, how managers get their wins. I think McDermott got about 80% of his wins in a row. So he won two or more in a row.
Yeah.
With Adkins, that amount is about 55-60%. So it would seem to suggest that our team doesn't hold form. I mean, we've won six games this season, and three of them were in a row, and the rest have just been odd wins here and there.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily think we're going to find form.
And more recently, it's what, been two wins out of eight, and it's one in four we're basically winning.
Mm.
That's not going to keep you up, is it?
Mm.
3 points out of every four matches.
But we won them 3-0.
Yeah,
we won them 3-0.
I still think that there's one. I still think that you will find, even Reading playing the way they are, you will find three teams worse than Reading come in this season.
This is
the bottom I think Reading are going to hit.
And we shouldn't be talking about it. We said it's a season of consolidation, but we shouldn't be talking about finishing 21st.
No, of course
we
should not.
We shouldn't be talking about it, but again, we argued this the other day. What's the difference between finishing 7th and finishing 21st? At the end of the day, you're still playing Championship football next season.
Yeah. But you go into the Championship season with a bit more of a high than you do when you finish 21st or 20th.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying you want to finish 21st, but the end result is the same. So if you're saying we're building towards next season.
Yeah, as long as you're building.
Yeah. Mm. Again, going over old ground, so let's move on.
I'm still calm, though.
It's because Wim won't let it go, that's why. He's still trying to get his little...
I've got to provide the other side of the coin here. We can't all be sitting bashing Nigel Adkins.
You could be swayed.
I can be swayed. I'm not sitting here. I'm not Nigel. It's funny because I'm not Nigel Adkins' biggest fan. I really don't like the guy as a person, and his management style winds me up a bit.
This reminds you of Derek Okora.
I just like to see a manager. I just want to have it in my head that he's had an opportunity to build in a window and get a fit squad of players, and then if he falls down, then you'd say bin him off. But I just. Yeah, anyway.
We hope you're right.
Go back and listen. We to last week's right. show. Yeah, very much so.
You're not there.
Right. George Dupree, could the loss of Alex McCarthy be even more important than we thought? Our young defence need a commanding keeper. And talking about keeper issues, Richard Langley says, Federici, there's no doubt he's a top shot stopper, but he doesn't command his box. Is he as culpable for the poor goals? Keepers. I'm not necessarily sure I think that losing McCarthy was a big thing. I don't think McCarthy was particularly commanding of his area.
And I think McCarthy is a much better goalkeeper than Federici.
But I don't know how many of the goals that we've conceded you can put down to Federici as opposed to an individual error somewhere else across the board. I think first season in the Premier League when Federici was starting that and then McCarthy came in, then Federici was making mistakes and you could hang goals on him. I remember a couple, I think against Liverpool, we let one through his hands, but I don't think Federici's making the same sorts of mistakes this season.
I think Federici's a bottle job. I think he's got no bottle. I think if he had a little bit about him, he'd be a much better goalkeeper.
That's harsh.
No, it's not.
That's harsh.
He's a bottle job. Any ball into
he was
the
one
box.
Of the best goalkeepers in the Championship.
He's a great shot stopper. He's great at kicking. He's his two major attributes. When it comes to commanding your box, especially when you've got young defenders, you need to be able to get that ball and grab it, and he doesn't do it. So I think he's a bottle job. A lot of people agree with me.
I don't think he's the best at commanding his area, certainly. But
on the website, is Federici a bottle job?
That's a strong take. We need a strong take.
I was like, Federici, he's not got a strong take.
Good link.
But what do you think about the McCarthy sale? Do you think that's a bigger...
Well, I can hardly say now that it wasn't such a big thing. I think he had an excellent season last year. I think he's a good shot stopper as well. The only thing that let him down was his kicking. But other than that, I thought he's a great goalkeeper and he'll go on to get better and better.
The thing is, if Adam Federici plays on our team and we finish 21st, then that doesn't matter, does it?
Oh, come on.
Well, that's all right if you're a bottle job, as long as you don't get relegated.
I'm not saying I want to see Reading sitting 21st in the table. I'm saying this season is a write-off. I don't care if you write off in 21st or 7th. If you're building, if you're going to tell me you're going to be better next season. But anyway.
Yeah, we can't tell you that.
And plus, if you finished, if you finished 21st this season, then next season you can finish 19th and say it was an improvement.
He might not even be here next season.
And Federici, is that a contract? We are with a preview for you guys out there. We are doing a round table from some of our editorial team on the website this week, looking at all the players are out of contract and would we keep them.
Oh,
so stay tuned to tylerson.com for that.
We're going to pub chat that. Sure.
Maybe we probably will do as we come nearer to the transfer deadline.
Okay,
but it's all one happy medium.
Mm-hmm.
We're in your ears. We're on your web screen.
It's interesting though, because Gooden was on about Federici and someone rung in and said that they thought he was a bottle job. It wasn't me. And he didn't say bottle job, but he implied that he thought he was a bit of a bottle job. And Gooden was adamant that he wasn't. He was like, no, he commands his box great, but I've never seen him command his box at all.
I don't think he's as bad as you've been saying. But I agree. I don't think he's Peter Schmeichel either.
Put it to listeners.
He's not the weak link in the side.
Okay, well, again. Who is it?
They're all over, really.
It's too many of them.
It's just a very, it's a very, very weak fence.
The chain's broken.
It's not the weak link.
Send us in a tweet to the Tireless End using the hashtag TTE podcast. Is Federici a bottle job?
I bet you'll get more backs than he is in the end.
Well, we shall see. No one will probably respond. And
I will.
Probably, there's one. Stuff the ballot box.
Federici's missus might pipe up, so that's one each.
Oh, dear. History, previous. I've completely losing track now. I'm losing the will. Losing the will.
Oh, Wesley's on a roll now.
Go. Gary.
Steve's coming out of his ears this week.
That's going to slate.
Gary Rapley. Was Sean Morrison sold over Adkins' head? Top player to lose. Can't be good for team confidence.
I think he was. But it's like I've said a couple of times. I think every player has a price. And if someone comes in with a bid that you're going to take, you're going to take it. If someone came in and offered, say, $6 million for Jordan Ibiza, you'd probably say yes, take it.
Yeah, you'd bite their hand off, yeah. I think it was mutually beneficial, wasn't it? Yeah. I think Morrison was keen to go to Cardiff and Reading were keen to take the money for him. So
yeah, I just don't think they expect Anton Ferdinand to be out till November.
No, I think that was what paved the way for Cox and Mackie to come in.
I don't know if necessarily think there was financial pressure to get rid of Morrison, because I think by then the takeover was just about being completed.
But in this era of financial fair play and stuff, you still need to balance the books.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I think if Ferdinand would have been injured, it wouldn't have been injured, it wouldn't have been so much of a debate.
Mm. No. Darren Collins has an easy question for us here. He says, how are we going to turn this around?
Sack the manager.
Ewan Cunningham.
I was going to give a bit of a constructive one.
No.
I think we could look at a new manager.
Okay, right. And
defensive coach, Wally Downs.
Yeah, we need a defensive coach.
Ewan Cunningham.
Coach, head coach.
Order.
Chairman.
Quorum.
Get the gavel out. Yeah, order.
Ewan Cunningham. Taking all context into account, who should we base a defence around at the moment? All seems to be out of form. Hector, maybe? No.
If we're doing that, we are in trouble.
No.
I honestly don't know.
Stephen Ferdinand. Kelly. Westy, I'm sure you'll agree.
No. I think
Sean Cummings?
No. Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think we need a fit Ferdinand. But will he ever be fit? I think really they've got to buy a new centre back. They need a new centre back.
New left. How does this sound for a defence? AN, new left back. Alex Pearce, Anton Ferdinand, Chris Gunter. Are you happy with that as a back four?
Yes.
Johnny? Yeah. I think, we're going to be a bit swayed by what Alex Pearce did on Friday night, but I think he's a decent enough centre back. At this level,
I don't think.
What's going wrong though with Alex Pearce? Because ever since that whole contract route, he's not been the same player. Does he need maybe a move?
Maybe he doesn't have as many allies in the dressing room. I don't know. I wouldn't want to speculate.
I just think he needs someone that can guide him, stood next to him, rather than him being the guide. If you know what I'm saying. When you got Hector and Cooper there. You've got two young players that, I'm not saying he's talking through games, but they're young and they're learning. I think Pearce needs to be the man who's being told what to do rather than telling the others.
He's played over 200 games now.
Yeah, I know, but some people...
Was that his 200th game? Or?
Yeah, it was Charlton, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're right there, but I think he needs to concentrate on what he's doing and let someone else take responsibility back there rather than...
He needs to be the brawn, not the brain.
Yeah, I mean, so you can play 300-400 games. Don't make you a leader, does it?
No, very true. And we've got a question on Alex Pearce from Will Jones saying, where does Cardiff leave Alex Pearce? Not captain since 2009. Hector's emergence Hector's emerging and he's out of contract. Should you give him a new deal at the moment?
Pierce. If you ain't got anything to replace him, then you'd have to, wouldn't you?
Yeah. The problem is, I don't think you'd replace him at the moment because he's on a decent wage, you'd imagine, because he had the whole contract row, didn't he?
Yeah, he signed at the end of the relegation season when Anton was handing out money.
Stupid.
Yeah, and I don't think Nigel Atkins slash AN new manager slash the new chairman would want to pay Alex Pearce as much to do what he's doing at the moment.
Yeah, but then I don't think anyone else would either, so...
I'd give him a 3-year deal, but I wonder if Alex Pearce wants to stay. I wonder whether he just... Yeah. Wants a new start.
Maybe.
Same with Harry Robson Kanu.
Yeah, maybe. I think maybe they could. Yeah, again, yeah, but wouldn't hurt me if they both went, to be honest.
The problem is you've then got to replace these players, haven't you? So, you know, however much you save on someone else having a new lower contract might be taken out by how much you pay for them.
Hmm. Yep, yeah, and just a lighter note to finish this podcast with.
Thank God.
George says, if the staff can serve me inside 15 minutes, which is by no means guaranteed, what's the perfect half-time beverage for the depressed fan?
It's not that watered-down Foster's, so I feel no, that's for certain. That depresses me even more at £4.
Well, it depends how many you can buy at a time. 4, 6, 8 pints?
Yeah.
How long have you got? They got the TVs in the concourse as well, so that's what I'd do, just buy 4 pints.
I think we need to talk about the outrage is food for a fiver now not also containing a chocolate bar.
Yeah, it is outrageous. But
that's... Any coincidence that our form has gone down and attendances have also gone down.
And the crowd are very quiet.
Yeah, since that deal. Make it happen, Reading. Bring back the chocolate bar.
It could be the change in circumstances we need.
It could be, yeah. Forget changing the manager. New signings. Bring back food.
I'd say what would please me down in the concourse. Some heating. Because it's freezing enough as it is. If they warm people up at half time, maybe they come out a bit more sprightly.
Now, you know it's winter when everyone's got the Bovril. That is the winter drink, the meaty winter drink.
And because there's less people in the stands as well, it's even colder.
Yeah, and it's quiet and it's not great at the moment.
If it's any consolation, we haven't got a game at the Bineski for another 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's good.
Anyway, that brings to an end a bit of an epic mailbag. Thank you for everyone who sent in your tweets. I said, use the hashtag TTE podcast to get in touch with us. Just a couple more bits and pieces before we move on in any other business.
The Tarlhurst End podcast. Any other business?
Welcome back to Any Other Business. A couple of brief things to talk about. One thing I didn't bring up in News Bites, just very quickly, rumours that Glenn Murray going to Derby. Apparently they're going to bid $3.5 million for him. I don't know if...
It seems like a huge bid.
Yeah.
For, what, 31?
Well, we really were talking about 1.5, weren't they?
Well, the thing is, I mean, you'd imagine that the structure of this is Reading have a certain amount agreed, but there's no reason that any other team can't come in and make that bid, unless Glenn Murray were to turn us down, in which case...
Yeah, I think you'd have to look at the small print of the loan agreement and what they've signed, but I'm pretty sure that Reading must have a clause saying we can pay this money
yeah,
for
yeah. it. Charles said as much on Friday show. He said that he spoke to Nick Hammond, and Nick Hammond said there's been a price agreed. But again, to me, this doesn't come down to the clubs. It comes down to Glenn Murray. Now, you've got two offers on the table. Reading feeding off scraps, playing for a high-flying Derby, who are Premier League bound and scoring goals for fun. Where do you want to go?
It's either that or they give Reading their 1.5 million and Derby take 2.5 and he still goes to Derby.
Yeah.
I think Reading would probably say, yeah, all right, fair enough. You know what I mean?
There's only one place he's going if that bid is genuine, but...
I think he's a good player as well.
It's a shame to lose him.
Dreadful. I mean, I think he's lost the early season form and impetus that he had, but I still think you can see that he is a quality striker. I think he's better than Pog and better than...
I've got to grind you down, though. If you're a striker, feeling off so little has got to drive you nuts.
And you can see him getting frustrated as well. I mean, you know, we were down to 10 men and he was having to chase down the entire back four. Yeah. He was pointing at Norwood and Williams being like, well, why don't you come?
He was getting really frustrated in the Charlton game. He was having a go at Jordan Obita for not getting the ball in quickly. And as I said, for a guy who's, you know, coming off a 30-goal season a couple of years back before his injury, just scraps. Not good. As I said, whether that bid's genuine, I don't know. But again, seems a lot. But if Derby think, well, 3.5 million will guarantee us a place in the Premier League in that 120, 150 million bonanza, small price to pay, really.
If they're buying him in January, then you can see it happening. Because like I said, it will pretty much guarantee a promotion, I think.
So watch this space. Right, time to look ahead to our next game. It comes at Carrow Road, Norwich away. Norwich, another team that started the season like a house on fire. quickly rising to the top of the league. After 9 games, they had 20 points and were looking good for promotion. But a bit like Nottingham Forest, they've had a bit of a wobble in recent weeks. In their last, 9 games, and they've won just once, that coming against Bolton at home. So the most recent game was a real ding-dong affair against Brighton, where the lead changed hands several times.
Didn't they have a man sent off in that as well, I think?
Can't remember off the top of my head, but yeah. ended 3-3.
They did.
Yeah.
So they sit 10th in the table, much closer to the playoffs than Reading, though, on 27 points from 18 games. Nothing like a game against Reading to get your season back on track, is there?
Just looking at that, looking at that, they've conceded a lot of goals as well, haven't they?
They've only lost one at home, and that was to Charlton, one
in the last 4 games.
So, hey, Charlton are a great side.
Yeah, Charlton can do a job on any side, as we know.
Again, they've got some good players, Norwich, and you wouldn't expect them to keep slipping up like they are at the moment. They have conceded a lot of goals in the last 4 games, but on the flip side, they've scored quite a few as well, so it won't be a 0-0.
We mentioned it earlier. Gareth McCleary, obviously, back in fitness. Did you chuck him in from the start?
Yeah, start him.
Yeah, I think you have to, really. He certainly didn't show any ill effects of that game. Adkins was happy enough to bring him on at half-time, give him 45 minutes, and he was running, charging around like he'd been there. So he was clearly fit. I think you've got to chuck him in.
Give him an hour, yeah.
I think when Adkins is at this critical position in his career, he needs every good player he can get.
Yeah.
The other big selection dilemma is in terms of the full-backs. Again, your great friend Stephen Kelly continuing to play at right-back. But Ferns and our squad selector, which you can go to at thetylersen.com, over 60% of them want a beta back at left-back.
Yeah, I can't disagree with him. I'd rather have a beta at left-back.
He's really not done much, has he, since he's moved further forward, Johnny?
No, but as I said, I'm sure when Gareth Bale moved to the left wing, he didn't. You know, he took a bit of time to get used to that.
It's an age thing. I think, again, it'd grow into left midfield, left wing.
But you have to say as well, people like Michael Hector has grown into his position at centre-back. He certainly wasn't convincing me at the start of the season. When you consider that in Scotland he played most of his games, I think, in defensive midfield, completely different position.
Yeah.
You need a few games to learn the position. Jordan Peters played the last year of his career at left-back.
You need a good couple of seasons at that age.
I think, though, at the moment, though, if you say, is he a difference maker at left wing or left back? I think at the moment he's a difference maker at left back.
Yeah.
So you have to play him there for the time being.
Yeah. Now that you've got McCleary back on one wing, I think
stick Mackie out on the other.
Yeah, Mackie can't. Not Carney.
Apparently, Blackman. He didn't have the worst game of his career. In fact, it was probably one of his better games this season at Cardiff.
Mm.
But it's harder to stop Jordan if he plays left back, because it's harder to pick up, because you know he's going to be making bombing runs now and again. Someone's got to follow you then, rather than when you're playing left midfield or left wing, the right back's picking you up all the time. And I think he struggled, especially in the last home game, and we said what a poor game he had. I think he's more of a threat from left back at the moment than he is from left wing.
Yeah, and you wonder if the Gareth McCleary situation might not force Nigel Adkins' hand, but it makes it a bit easier, because he starts McCleary, he'll obviously have the temptation to get Gunter in behind him, because they've got that understanding.
Yeah,
so that by default would mean a beta moving to left.
Also, it makes that right side strong again, and makes it harder for teams to defend against us, because we can attack on both fronts, whereas a lot of our attacks can come over from one side or the other. Because we've said Mackie's not great as a left midfielder, right midfielder, because he doesn't seem to be able to beat players or put in decent crosses, although he does work hard.
Okay, well, let's get the scores on the doors then. Prediction league-wise, 3 of you predicted 3-1 defeats. The 2 of you and Charles all predicting 3-1 defeats.
And
I
tell you what,
close.
Far off, yeah, 2-0 down at half-time and with 10 men, and then Reading get one back. You think, come on, Cardiff, break forward.
Yeah.
For in the nicest supporting Reading way possible.
Well, I predicted a 2-2, so I got the 2.
The great thing was, both of those predictions were well in the mix right up to the end, weren't they? Anything could happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exciting stuff.
But that left the standing with Johnny on top on 13 points, myself and Charles second on 11, and Westy still chasing the pack on 7 at the bottom.
Sneaks into the top 4.
Early days.
So, Norwich away. Johnny, we'll start with you.
I'm the 3-1 bandit.
Are you going to continue that?
Of course I'm continuing with the 3-1. To Norwich, obviously.
Right. Westy?
I'm going to... I know it's going to sound a bit random after what I've been saying, but I'm going to predict a Reading win.
Ooh, okay. Score?
2-1.
Rogue.
Don't think I'm losing. 1-1. I'm trying to catch up.
1-1 for me.
Boom or bust, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm also trying to play catch up, so I'm going to go for a 1-1.
Whereas I can go for the safe play, predicting them to lose.
That we actually think is going to happen. Yeah, you can go for that one.
Absolutely. Well, we'll find out how we got on next week. We'll get Charles's score prediction in the podcast section on Friday. And just before we go, gents, obviously some sad news. Well, I personally think it's sad that the Reading Evening Post is going to stop publishing in physical form from next month.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember when Johnny was there and I used to spend a lot of time down there, then they was talking about it then. And that building, anyone who lives in Reading knows the Evening Post building. It's a huge, huge building. Mm. But when you go in it, they basically use 6 desks. And I think some of them do it for nothing anyway. So it was always in the pipeline. That there's just no money in local newspapers no more. And that's why they've given them away more recently. And anything they get any money out of is advertising. And they can't afford to pay anyone really, so...
Yeah, no, a massive shame because... Yeah, I remember, you know, the newspaper pullouts, etc. I've still got the ones from when Reading went up in 2005-06 with all the pictures and the player ratings, all that sort of stuff. And I think that's something that you can't quite replicate in digital form, obviously. You're not going to print off a picture of you getting promoted.
The thing is, I think it's sad, but I've got to hold my hands up and say, I don't buy it.
No, it's sad, but unfortunately, it's progress. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, and I'm going to make myself sound really old now, that my dad used to make me go and get the Evening Post after 4 o'clock, so he used to have like an afternoon edition as well as a morning edition. And there was more news in the evening one about the football, so he used to have to go after 4, after 5, where it was. So it's just the way it is. I mean,
well, it used to be every weekday, didn't it? And then they cut it down to
more recently. But yeah, it was always in the pipeline for the last 2 or 3 years, and there's just no money in local newspapers anymore.
Yeah, well, I said our thoughts go out to anyone who's losing their job as a result of that. And as I said to Charles on Friday, you know, fingers crossed that the website takes off in a similar manner and they can afford to bring more people back in and can grow that way. But it's the end of an era.
Yeah, I will say one thing. I think Charles Watts has been really good. What he writes and how he's been as a reporter, I think he's been excellent. So
not afraid to ask the hard questions.
No.
And his opinion piece today was very much worth checking out.
Yeah.
From getreading.co.uk. As I said, we're continuing to do our podcasts as usual for the foreseeable future. Hopefully on Friday, just before the game. So check that out and subscribe to the show on iTunes and you get both straight onto your device. But anyway, that's it from us.
Are we leaving it on a downer like that? You should never leave it on a downer.
Okay, well, have you got a plus? Oh, sorry, Wesley. What's your champagne moment?
I haven't got one.
Alex Pearce is
inept defended.
Yeah. Alex Pearce's hat trick. Not often he scores a hat trick.
I think you've got to give it to Alex Pearce's hat trick. Yeah.
And in Reading, first ever professional women footballer coming on in front of 55,000.
Frank Kirby.
Yeah, at Wembley.
There's a joke there somewhere. I'm not going to use it though.
Don't.
I'm not going.
No.
Just check out what Wim just said. We'll move on.
No. Oh, I'm trying to leave this on a nice positive. No. Anyway, congratulations to Fran.
Yeah, well done, Fran.
As I said, playing in front of 55,000 is more than any Reading players are likely to do in the foreseeable future. So, well done to you. Anyway, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week. And until then, as I said, check out the website at thetarlesson.com and I'll be back with Charles later in the week. Ta-da. It's funny how the crowd's always been.